This program is sponsored by Wicked Chronic in Natick, Massachusetts. Located at 185 Worcester Street, right on Route 9, they can be reached at 508-545-8105 or at wickedchronicvendorcommerce.com. Wicked Chronic is a boutique-style retail shop that focuses on selling counterculture products such as Wiccan, cannabis cultures coming together in a unique setting. You need something for that special spell? Go on down to Wicked Chronic in Natick, Massachusetts and speak to Beverly. Tell them Dr. Chris sent you. Check them out today. Welcome to the Dead TV Podcast, a podcast dedicated to canceled television shows in the horror, science fiction, fantasy genre, and I am your host, Dr. Chris.
And I'm Mr. Seneca.
And we are continuing our coverage of Friday the 13th, the TV series, with the episode Scarecrow, and Mr. Seneca has the episode synopsis for us.
Okay, this is Scarecrow, which is Season 1, Episode 11, originally aired on February 1st, 1988. Mickey and Ryan search for a cursed scarecrow that may be responsible for murder. Bum, bum, bum.
And the cursed antique of the episode is a scarecrow, and we will talk about our own interactions with scarecrows at the end of the episode. And my feelings about this episode is that this is actually one of the... A lot of people agree, including Elise Wax, who was unable to join us for this recording due to an accident that she had, but she will be steadily recovering from it. But in her book's Curious Goods, Behind the Scenes of Friday the 13th, this is one of the scarier episodes of the show, and I wasn't scared watching it, but I definitely got that kind of vibe of this episode, it being a scary episode for the show.
Yeah, it's definitely a creepy episode. I wouldn't actually put it as scary as such, but it was definitely creepy, and scarecrows, just as an overall TV trope, it's just a scary thing. Something that looks human but is not human is always on that realm of creepy, scary, like... You know, you do a short search for scary scarecrow movies, and like 40 of them pop up.
And this is also one of the very few Jack-less episodes, as Jack is one of the three characters that is in almost every single episode of the entire show, all 72. But this is an episode he's not in, and he's only mentioned in. He's off trying to find something else.
The Icarus feather.
The Icarus feather, which is kind of cool.
Feather, yeah.
Which I don't know, and I'm not going to go too far ahead. There's not a lot of intercontinuity between these episodes that much as, let's say, a show like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, The X-Files, or you know, anything on the CW. Everything has to be connected these days. I don't know if there's an Icarus feather episode that comes up later on or anything like that. But there are always nods to other cases that we never get to see within the context of the show itself, which is something I'd mentioned before, that maybe doing a comic book series about some of these other objects that they had to go and find would be great, kind of like a Tales of the Friday the 13th TV series.
Yeah, that would be cool. Like, you know, you'd have like this one-shot comic of Jack's adventure trying to find the Icarus feather, and I was trying to imagine like what an Icarus feather would actually do. And, of course, it would have to be in the realm of making someone fly, because that's the whole story of Icarus, is that his father made him a set of wings out of wax and feathers, and he flew, but then flew too high to the sun, and his wax melted, and he fell and collapsed into the sea. A feather from an Icarus device like that surely must be about flying, and maybe, I don't know, it kills people because they... use it for too long? I don't know. I was trying to imagine exactly what that, you know, cursed object might have been. But that would be a really good one-shot. Just, you know, his adventure and, like, the twists and turns that he has to take and missing the opportunities to get it and just, you know, having his life in peril a couple of times and then he finally gets it and evil is vanquished. It would be good to read.
There's one particular actor I wanted to point out for this episode. Nicholas Van Burek? Burek? It's B-U-R-E-K, and if I mispronounce it, I'm sorry, I'm not an expert linguist. He plays Jordy, the kid in the episode that Ryan kind of takes under his wing, because we learn a little bit about Ryan's backstory that he lost his brother.
Yeah, I was actually really pleased that they added a little bit more backstory for him.
This kid has gone on to do, this kid is no longer a kid, of course, many things, but he's been on the TV series such as Killjoys, 12 Monkeys, he's done several voices for Assassin's Creed. He was in the recently canceled Beauty and the Beast television series, which we will never cover. Just kind of a bit part actor here and there, working, you know, just a working hustle actor. Most recently, he was on Dark Matter, which is on the Sci-Fi Channel, and he was in the Suicide Squad movie.
Oh, really? So he's like still a very prolific actor, huh?
I wouldn't say prolific. I mean, he's not in anything that you really kind of recognize, but okay. He's done...
He gets work every now and then.
Yeah, he gets work every now and then. He was on... what's the name of the show? Designated Survivor.
Hmm.
I believe that's the show with Kiefer Sutherland, who is playing as the President of the United States.
Huh, okay. I'm not familiar with it.
The entire cabinet of the White House, plus most of the Joint Chiefs and the Senate, are all killed in a terrorist attack. And the only survivor is played by Kiefer Sutherland. So he immediately becomes the President of the United States. Like, he is the bottom guy on the totem pole of who would become president if the president was dead, and then the vice president, you know how the whole system works. He was the bottom guy.
Okay.
That just made him like the worst character. He was just like the last cabinet member that you would think would become president. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of like what is it on Battlestar Galactica? The Madam Secretary of Education becomes the President of the United States after the rest of the cabinet is wiped out during the Cylon attack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, getting a little off topic there.
All right. Episode.
Scarecrow, yeah. What did the episode in question with Scarecrow, I love how they go to a town called Riverdale. It immediately made me think of the current television show, which is very much like Friday's Curse or Friday the 13th, the TV series, because
yeah.
Riverdale is not your typical Archie show. It's very much more akin to a supernatural kind of show or a horror theme show with, like, you know, the whodunit and, like, there was a, you know, kind of a serial killer this past season. So that immediately sprang to mind.
Yeah, and since it's mentioned in the show, three people go missing every harvest. And you'd think that they keep finding these decapitated bodies, or at least in this episode you find a couple of them, that you'd get the kind of a sense that there might be a serial killer that's decapitating people if maybe you find one body every year, or, you know, two bodies one year, no bodies the next year, one body the next year. You know, there'd be like a serial killer thing going on, and they're just people just not purely going missing, because the only thing that's taken is the head. The body remains.
This is a common trope of things involving scarecrows, or horror movies involving scarecrows. They need some type of sacrifice of some kind. Now, in this episode, I don't think it's distinctly actually mentioned if the scarecrow is sacrificing people to some type of, like, god or something. On the TV series Supernatural, there's a scarecrow that the townspeople leave people out for the scarecrow to kill because it's a god, and they get a good harvest out of it.
Yeah, I mean, in our pop culture has been bereft with scarecrow imagery. You know, everything from, like, the Batman scarecrow to, as I said, like, 40 movies on IMDb that, you know, have a bad guy, which is a scarecrow.
Yeah.
I was mentioning scarecrow. You know, there's also, like, Children of the Corn. There's a storyline with the scarecrows. Like, it is everywhere. Some of the scarecrows are nice, some of them are evil, but most of the time they're kind of on that evil side. And a lot of the continuing themes is that it brings about a good new year, like a good harvest, new year. And I think it goes back to the pagan roots of the, like, Wicker Man and the sacrifice of the last grains of wheat in order to make the new year's, the next year's harvest just as good or better.
The most notable scarecrow movie, I think, is Dark Knight of the Scarecrows, a 1981 made-for-TV movie about a small town where a man, a mentally challenged man, is wrongfully accused of killing a little girl who's not actually dead, and the townsfolk, you know, get together a posse and they kill him. And then a mysterious scarecrow starts being seen around town, killing off the people that murdered the mentally challenged man one by one by one.
In this episode, we also have a mentally challenged man who dons the scarecrow outfit.
Yeah. By the way, the mentally challenged man was the character is Bubba Ritter, played by Larry Drake. You might know him as the villain from Darkman.
Oh, another villain with a mask.
Yes. And then Scarecrows from 1988, which also just came out recently from Blu-ray, so highly recommend checking it out to catch up on your Scarecrow nuttiness. But yeah, this Scarecrow looked like more something from a Clive Barker story, too, by the way.
Yeah, the face was not really, typical of what you'd find a Scarecrow to be in. Like, you know, during Halloween, you get all those Scarecrow type of decorations. This was more like a leather mask that had been formed over a facial structure.
Uh-huh.
With the mouth kind of a slit in the leather. It was actually really interesting, and I think that was part of the creepiness factor of it, was that kind of wet leather look. I don't know who did the costume and design on that, but that was really, really well done.
There's one thing I need to point out that I just suddenly realized. Jack does not appear in either Scarecrow or Tales of the Undead.
That's true.
Yeah. I completely forgot that we don't make almost any mention of Jack in Tales of the Undead.
No, I think we might have mentioned his passing, the actor, but not his absence.
Yeah, that's weird. I completely missed that. But it's only the two episodes that he doesn't appear in for the entire show. But he's mentioned as a, like, he's over in Kansas getting the CD that can kill people when you play the music backwards.
Yep.
The record.
The record, yeah. So the first killing is the father of the son, Jordy. And he is a nearby farmer whose farm is not really taking off. And in the first, 2 minutes, you find out he is a widower. Because of a picture pinned to the Scarecrow, that's the Scarecrow's target. And, right there, head lopped off, the boy runs and hides, doesn't want to see the Scarecrow again, and is basically living on his own in the house all the way through to the end of the episode, when Ryan and Mickey find him.
Oh, okay. When I mentioned Clive Barker, I said Nightbreed. I was thinking of David Cronenberg's character Zipperface from Nightbreed. Do you remember that?
I love the movie Nightbreed, but Zipperface?
Well, that's what his nickname is, because he's got zippers on his mouth and eyes. He's the psychiatrist in the movie, played by David Cronenberg.
Oh, yeah. He wears the leather linen mask.
Correct. Yeah. Which is funny, considering we're going to get to something about David Cronenberg very, very soon. So
our next episode.
Yeah. What is really funny is that there's a mention of the monikered Roby will have this jaunty tune blasting in her head in the episode. Do you remember that? And it's a cover of a famous Chess song sung by Murray Head.
Oh, that one.
Yes. And Murray Head is, by the way, the brother of Anthony Stewart Head, a.k.a. Giles on Buffy.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I had to look that up because I was wondering about the song that he was playing, and that's when I found out was the Chess song sung by Murray Head. And I'm like, I'm curious if there's any relation, because I found out Murray Head was British, so is Anthony Stewart Head.
Interesting. Cool. Mm,
definitely.
Yeah. In this episode, we have a handler for the Scarecrow, one that's actually pinning the pictures to the Scarecrow and, leading the whole thing.
Yeah, controlling it.
Yeah, what is her name? Marge Longacre.
Mm-hmm.
And she runs the Longacre Inn, which is the only place to stay in town. So, of course, Mickey and Ryan have to actually stay there. But she's just, that character itself is kind of creepy on her own. She almost has this American Gothic look to her, but I don't know, the types of faraway looks or scheming looks that she gives, I wouldn't trust the lady at all. That really brought up a lot of that creep factor of this episode.
The Scarecrow in question, by the way, is played by Ted Hanlon, who was a stunt coordinator on the La Femme Nikita TV series and then took a huge break in Hollywood from 1997 till about 2007, and then another big break between stunts. But he'd been a stuntman for a really long time and then took a lot of time off for reasons I cannot – it doesn't have any listing for. But has been in stunt coordinators in Police Academy movies, the War of the Worlds TV series, which I've mentioned several times, which we'll probably get to one day, the remake in the 90s of Car 54, Where Are You?, and as aforementioned, Darkman, the Darkman 2, the Return of Durant sequel.
Hmm, cool. Good stuff, man. Okay, so in this episode, Ryan and Mickey have sent out mailers to try to find this Scarecrow. So I guess that the record that they actually have of who it was sold to, I don't know, they couldn't trace down exactly where the Scarecrow was. So they just sent out mass mailings to find out, hey, you got a Scarecrow that an antique store would like to buy?
Yeah, I mean, they should do that for every single item, because almost none of the items that they go after so far for the 11 episodes that we've done of the show are never with the original owner.
No, because at some point, that original owner has been cursed so much that they end up in jail, crazy, or dead.
Correct, yeah. And it goes on to somebody else, which is, you wonder why the person would want to inherit like something as bad that belonged to somebody that died, or something mysterious surrounding it. But the thing is that whenever the new person acquires the item in question, they're usually kind of a scumbag themselves.
Yeah, that's true. You know, very few things that have been sold and bought went to a good person, like that wood chipper. The wood chipper went to a good person, and he had no idea that it was a cursed object. You know, so I don't know how the... If someone were using the Scarecrow, why would they respond to a mailer about the Scarecrow? But in this case, it's the wife of the main farmer, Charlie. Her name is Tootie. And Tootie doesn't really want the Scarecrow at all in her life, because she knows the power of the Scarecrow and that they're actually killing people by proxy using this woman, Marge, as a handler for it. So she feels really guilty about it, tries to warn Mickey and Ryan about the Scarecrow. At least, you know, give them a little bit of hint as to, yes, they do have the Scarecrow. And she ends up dead herself. She's the second victim in the show. But I would imagine that if they put out mailers like, hey, anybody looking for a compact that can turn people to stone? If you were actually using it, you wouldn't really respond.
One of the grossest things in the episode is that Ryan is in the house and eating what looks like a sloppy Joe pie. It looks disgusting.
But he's a kid.
It looks so gross. It looks so disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, the refrigerator door's open. It looks like the kid has just been scrounging around the house, eating whatever, and not really taking care of anything. Very decrepit house. But, yeah, Sloppy Joe pie. That's a kid food, right?
Maybe Sloppy Joe's, but I don't know about a Sloppy Joe pie.
I don't know. My boy eats a lot of weird things.
I mean, once upon a time, my grandfather would make hot dogs and put peanut butter on them.
Hot dogs and peanut butter?
Yeah.
Man, that sounds gross. Weird Al Yankovic does do a hot dog Twinkie cheese whiz, I guess edible. I don't really think you'd call it a sandwich, but yeah, on his Weird Al Yankovic show. Disgusting. Anyway, so we find that the farmer, Charlie, his wife, Trudy, has a young man who is mentally deficient. And is his name Nick? I'm not sure.
Yeah, Nick. Yeah. He's the son of Charlie and Tootie.
Yeah. So Nick is the one that kind of dons the Scarecrow outfit in order to attack Mickey.
Played by Todd Duckworth.
Yeah, so he goes out and attacks Mickey because he likes redheads, and Marge actually kind of goads him into it, you know, saying that, you know, she's a feisty filly, you need to break her before you can ride her, as if it's like, okay, you need to beat her up so you can rape her.
Is that what that meant? That sounds horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to break her before you can ride her.
You
gotta
beat her up
before
you rape her. That sounds disgusting.
Yeah, no. But then he goes
Mother of the
and,
Year
you know,
right there.
Tries to kill her with a scythe.
Mother of the Year right there.
Well, it's not her son. So. Yeah, she just is trying to like.
Zetica, hold on.
Violent murder.
Hold on. Your Skype is breaking up something horribly. Your Skype is just.
Is that an
It sounds better now. It sounds better now, yeah. But before, everything you were saying is just you couldn't understand it.
Okay. So, where did I leave off?
Before it started breaking up? Yeah, I mean, I commented saying, like, the whole... it was before my comment about, like, understanding what she was really trying to imply to her son.
Okay.
So... Yeah, I got that. Okay. The killer, when Roby locks Mickey, Rob locks the sheriff in the closet, the outfit that she finds reminds me of the killer from I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh, really? I don't think it's been such a long time since I've seen that movie. I'm not exactly sure what the killer was wearing.
Was that rain slicker, rain hat? Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So that one was, Marge wears a black one, and then... That one was a yellow slicker?
You know, I remember it also being black later on. I don't think it was yellow. I think it was yellow, like, in promos, but I also remember it being black. In fact, I'm looking at the poster right now, and it's pretty black in the poster.
Okay.
Because it's a 90s floating head poster where, like, the hot teen actors are above the killer who's in, like, the bottom.
Yeah.
So, when Ryan tries to save the kid, do you notice how he, like, completely flips the fuck out?
Oh, the kid flips out?
No. Ryan flips out when he tries to save the kid.
Ryan flips out? Man, I am just blanking on this.
Ryan, like, completely, like, flips out or whatever and starts screaming for the kid to get away when he's trying to save him.
Oh, yeah.
The kid's being held hostage?
Yeah, because he's having flashbacks of his brother and not being able to actually help his brother because his brother was hit by a truck. And so he wants to be able to help this kid. And yeah, I do remember that scene.
It just looked so ridiculously overacted when he just, at a snap of a finger, he just starts flailing out.
It's almost as if it's like, emotionally, I'm not going to stand by and do nothing. You know, like, I have to intervene here. And Marge... Like, she kills a number of people in this movie, either herself or attempted to kill them, like, by her own hands. Like, she kills the farmer, Charlie, with a hay hook, and she stabs the cop with some scissors, even though he survives, and she sends the son, the deranged son, off to his death. Like, she's really, like, just a killer. You know, she was about to, like, kill... Ryan and Mickey just on her own without a Scarecrow's involvement.
No control whatsoever over her killing spree.
No. That would be just a textbook serial killer right there.
Okay, the one thing I want to point out is that the Scarecrow seems to have the ability to kill everyone except for Mickey. Because every time he tried to kill Mickey, she ducked out of the way pretty fast. Or she did some type of like button combination where she was able to move, you know, to slightly to the left. To the right, and the Scarecrow missed. Why? Because script dictates it, and she's one of the main characters. But it just really looks ridiculous that he could kill all these other people, but Mickey, when he goes after her every time, it's like, I missed.
Yeah, you know, he's in a hotel room, and hotel rooms aren't very big.
But even in the barn later, remember, he found her in the barn?
Wasn't that Nick?
Mickey encountered the Scarecrow twice in this episode.
That's true, yeah.
And both times, the Scarecrow was awful at trying to kill her.
That's true. And it since the picture was pinned onto him, she had to rip off the ID in order to get her picture off, and then the Scarecrow just kind of wilted to the floor.
Yeah, like a,
Like one of those, waving inflatable arm tube guys.
Yeah.
That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah.
So since Marge didn't actually kill the cop really takes Geordi, the kid, under his wing and sends him off to his aunt at the end of the show. But there's this baseball that Ryan has as like a memento of his brother, his deceased brother, and he actually gives it to Geordi, and this is a nice little like bookend type of scenario to the scene. It's really touching, and he gives this very worn-out baseball, and it's very meaningful to Ryan, and Geordi says that, Jimmy was one of his nicknames. There was this connection that even though they didn't actually know one another before, they instantly knew each other, which I thought was a good touch to the episode.
One of the creepiest moments in the episode I almost forgot about is when Ryan and Geordi go to the barn and they find dozens of scarecrows hanging there.
Yeah, why would you have so many scarecrows just hanging up from the rafters like that?
Well, maybe the scarecrow itself gets kind of ratty. They need, you know, she needs a new one to go on the killing spree with.
I don't know, but some of those other ones, like, they look just like standard scarecrows that you would find, you know, at any sort of harvest. You know, just bucket heads and, you know, triangle eyes, like, just generic scarecrows. But
one of the most,
there must have been, like, 8 or 9 of them that I counted.
One of the most recent examples of a scarecrow in a pop culture horror movie that I wanted to mention is, as of this year, Annabelle Creations. There's a the demon that possesses the Annabelle doll uses its supernatural, magic-y, mumbo-jumbo stuff to take possession of a scarecrow in the movie.
Cool. I haven't seen that one yet.
It's good. It's better than Annabelle. Annabelle was fucking awful. Annabelle Creations is really good.
Mickey actually says, I wonder what they did with the heads.
Mm-hmm.
It says in Elise's book, and this is pretty interesting actually, is that writer Mark Scott Zakrie says that the scene that he imagined was that it was supposed to be raining and that you'd pan past the cross where the scarecrow would have been, and you see the field with the crossbeam, and the rain would wash away the topsoil and reveal the heads below. Like it was an actual sacrifice at that spot to some sort of ancient god or Satan. And I think that would have been really cool to do, but apparently there was some sort of, they weren't allowed to do that scene. Either it was just too much or, you know, TV couldn't do it. You know, but that's kind of that closure. So like, what did they do with the heads?
Yeah, they that's one of those open-ended things, but it's nice to know that we weren't just like given the heads like falling out of someone's like bag somewhere or something, and they gave us that little bit of mystery.
8 heads in a duffel bag.
Basically. The thing about Ryan's brother does come back in a later episode, which I'm not going to reveal when happens, but it does go into more of the detail about what happened with Ryan's brother as we go into like some of Ryan's other family characters in a future episode coming up.
Cool. And if you are interested in finding out more about scarecrows, the website TV Tropes actually has a ton of information about all the locations that in pop culture where you can find scarecrows. And on IMDb, all you have to do is enter scary scarecrow movies, and you can get a list of such gems such as Night of the Scarecrow and Children of the Corn 3, Jack-O, Goosebumps, Psycho Scarecrow, of course, the Jeepers Creepers, Scarecrow Slayer, Dark Walker, and Dark Harvest, etc., etc.
One other thing about like why the southern gothicness of this episode, the writer of the story, Mark Scott Zakrie, okay, was inspired by To Kill a Mockingbird and Truman Capote.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
A lot of that was southern gothic thrillers written.
You know, a lot of creepy things happen on rural farmland.
Definitely. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to play some spots from other podcasts here on the Dead TV Podcast, and then we'll be back with Faith Healer very soon.
Hi, I'm Ellie, and this is Rob.
Howdy.
And we're the hosts of Horror Never Sleeps, a new weekly horror movie retrospective podcast. We will be reviewing your favourite scary movies like Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, and Psycho.
Also, we'll be covering classic gems like Maniac Cop, The Lost Boys,
The Human Centipede.
Whoa. No.
Oh, we'll see. First episode will be released mid-November. You can listen on iTunes or your favourite podcast app.
Until then, stay scared. Ooh.
Yeah, we won't be doing that.
Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca.
We're the hosts of a new true crime podcast called Yours in Murder.
We put out a new episode every week. We switch between covering true crime cases together and analyzing true crimes in our minisodes.
We take turns on the minisodes, focusing on our unique perspectives.
I have a degree in forensic science.
And I have one in journalism.
So we're able to go beyond Wikipedia and dive into the facts of the case. We look at the forensic evidence and the spin put on cases by the media.
Check us out on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and like us on Facebook for an update on today in true crime history.
As always, we are Yours in Murder.
And we're back with the Dead TV podcast and the episode Faith Healer, which is directed by David Cronenberg, best known for directing The Fly,
Videodrome,
Videodrome, and many other great, fantastic, usually body horror films, and it definitely shows in this episode.
Oh my God, the effects are so awesome!
Yes, definitely. I was trying to get out of my mouth the other three that I was going to think of: The Brood, Scanners, The Dead Zone, Rabbit, and the list goes on and on and on and on. Some of the best body horror movies that have ever been made. He also did a movie I absolutely love, which is not really a body horror movie. It's based on a comic book called History of Violence. Totally check it out. It stars Viggo Mortensen, best known as playing the Ranger in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Mr. Zetica now has the episode synopsis for us.
All right. This is episode 12, season 1, Faith Healer. Originally aired February 8th, 1988. Faith Healer, an unscrupulous faith healer, discovers a powerful glove that turns him into a killer. Now, this is kind of a weird one because he finds this glove in a dirty alley. It's not something that he bought or has, you know, a real chain of command as to where this glove was sold and purchased, and you know, it's just something he found, which is kind of more of a mystery about this episode that never really gets cleared up.
Yeah, and this is also a very unusual episode, as they, according to Elise's book, they don't really quite understand how they got Cronenberg in the episode, and Cronenberg wasn't available for comment regarding the episode. But this episode almost has very little to do with our main characters. In fact, Mickey and Ryan are hardly ever in it, and it's a very, it's mostly a Jack episode, but even Jack himself is barely in the episode. And Cronenberg it was stated that he actually didn't want to do anything with the main characters, so maybe he didn't quite understand what the show really was. Maybe he thought it was like an anthology show and wanted to do his own thing. But the episode's not written by him, and Cronenberg has a history of really only directing things that he writes.
This one kind of deviates a little bit from the usual path that we find these cursed objects in.
Yeah, it's in the garbage.
There's only mention about, you know, this glove coming into the awareness of our main characters because they see the glove on this, like, television, this Faith Healer's television show.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, what's funny is that the actor in the episode, kind of like, there's two main characters besides our main cast of three. There's the Faith Healer himself, the priest, and then there's the buddy of Jack's, Jerry, I think, played by Robert Silverman, who is one of the few actors, side characters, to reappear in another episode. He's in Hate on Your Dial in 1989, an episode we'll get to in several months. But, like John D. LeMay, who plays Ryan, and of course was Steven in Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday, Robert A. Silverman would appear as Dietrich Perez, one of the characters in Jason X, the next entry in the Friday the 13th movie franchise. And Jason X would also have, as the director of the institution that captures Jason Voorhees, David Cronenberg.
Wow. So the interconnections are going wild here.
Yeah. But as far as I'm aware, there are not more than only a small handful of actors that appeared in both the television series and the movie franchise of the same name. I think you can count probably on one hand. Obviously, again, the biggest being Ryan playing Steven, Jason's nephew-in-law, if you want to call him that. Because he's the father of the... of Jason's second niece.
Twice removed,
We do a coverage of Jason Goes to Hell at one point in some full-depth analysis. There's some Friday the 13th news. So this episode is being recorded on the 17th. It's going to air on the 22nd of December. As of tomorrow, on Monday the 18th, when we're recording, the new patch for Friday the 13th, the video game, will be out. I wanted to make a big thing about that. So if you're playing, or you haven't played Friday the 13th, the video game, in a while, and you're listening to this podcast, go boot up your PS4, your Xbox One, or your Steam, download the new patch, and you're going to have access to Shelly, who's a character who appears in Friday the 13th Part 3D,
yes,
as well as Virtual Cabin, I think, and a couple other updates. But you want to go to the Friday the 13th game website or their Twitter for all the information of all the updates that are coming out. And it was recently announced there's going to be a Jason Goes to Hell documentary coming out about the making of the most controversial film in the Friday the 13th franchise. You think this TV series is controversial? No, because it really isn't, only because of the fact the whole thing with the name, we already explained all that. You can go back to our first episode to listen to why or really look it up yourself. But Jason Goes to Hell is so bizarre in the Friday the 13th film franchise. And if you haven't seen it, go watch it, and it will explain itself. Trust me. But one day we might actually give it some coverage just because John D. LeMay is in it. By the way, he liked a post of ours that I posted to his fan page, and
oh, cool.
I sent him a message. So I'm kind of, nice. Hopefully maybe he'll respond to it, and then we might have an interesting thing. Yeah. If I can ever find Roby's old phone number. I'm totally calling her, but I got to go through like some old phones that I have, because I used to have her manager's number and her phone number and her husband's number. So,
well, yeah, you've been doing these horror podcasts for 10 years, so I'm not surprised anymore what type of personal contacts you have.
Yeah, I would love to have her back on the show, and not Radio of Horror, but I would love to have her on this show.
Yeah, that would be awesome. That would be awesome.
Definitely.
And if you haven't played that Jason game,
Friday the 13th, the game.
My husband has it on the PS4, and it is amazing.
It's gotten much better since when it first launched. When it first launched, it had a shit ton of problems, and I'm going to admit I'm one of the people that complained about them, but it's gotten much better. And I think the graphic quality in the game has definitely gotten better. And I was comparing some video I shot from my game to a video that I posted to YouTube the day after the game came out, and the graphic difference is 1,000 times better. So they have really been working on trying to get this game up to snuff. I mean, this is not a AAA company. This is Gun Media. They are an independent gaming company. This is really one of the first games they've ever put out. So they're not like EA or Capcom or Konami, who doesn't even make video games anymore, or Nintendo for that matter. So they've got to be given some time as a leeway. But we're never going to see anything from the Friday the 13th TV series unless something surprises us comes out. But never say never, so because who knows? I mean, we're getting some stuff put into the game we never thought we would see. So moving right along with the TV show in question. One of the things I love about this faith healer is he's very much like those televangelists who's just like, who's like screaming out,
"Give me money, and so we can continue healing the sick." Yes,
or
praise Jesus. Yeah,
or he's like yelling at the devil. You know what I mean? What are they called? Televangelists.
Televangelists, revivalists. Like they all have that same type of shtick. You know, it's the. They're scraping donations off of people to further the advancement of Christianity and blah, 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 blah. And then they have some sort of, quote, miracle, you know, whether that is like on our Constantine episode where, you know, the snake handler and then the angel feather healing people. But this type of thing is so common in the South. I kind of feel bad for the people that fall for this. And just like in our first scene where Jack's friend Jerry actually basically proves that the pastor, Stewart, is a fraud.
A charlatan.
Like, he just takes the contact lenses right out of the guy's eyes, and he says, like, if you must give your money, give it to medical research. And you know, he mentions in the episode that he's debunked 400 of these people.
By the way, the toupee of the faith healer, did you notice that? Just how truly awful that looked on him?
You know, I did notice the toupee.
Yeah, it was like one of the worst things about this episode. good Cronenberg-directed episode. Sometimes still got some bad set dressing, and the set dressing being on top of his head.
You know, one of the things I found surprising is that when Mickey and Ryan actually do find, you know, the channel and the televangelist is on, he's basically showing off this glove, and I don't know, like, touching this diseased guy that with crutches with the glove on television, kind of like letting in people on his secrets. Like, I must protect my hand. I don't know. If you had that type of power, would you actually be showing it off like that?
But here's the thing. Did you also notice that before Jerry proved him to be the guy in the wheelchair to be a phony, he touched his face in a very familiar way to another famous Paramount television show?
With the finger on the forehead and the finger below the eye on the cheekbone?
Yeah. What other franchise does Paramount own that was being aired at the same time as Friday the 13th? In fact, actually usually aired in syndication where I lived an hour before.
Oh, dude, you got me there.
Star Trek The Next Generation.
Huh.
Think about it.
I guess that was aired at the same time.
The Vulcan mind meld. That's the way Spock would do a Vulcan mind meld when he touched somebody. Now, Spock, Leonard Nimoy, would not be appearing on Star Trek The Next Generation, at least for a few seasons, just as like a two-episode cameo. You know, the movies were out in theaters at this point, starring the original crew. And whenever he would do a Vulcan mind meld, like he does one with McCoy, the Doctor, when he dies at the end of 2, that's what it reminded me of. Almost identical. Now, if you're a Star Trek fan, leave a comment in the section below about, you know, how the Vulcan mind meld actually works and blah, 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 and that's fine. I might be wrong. But it looked very similar to the way Spock would do a Vulcan mind meld. And I thought maybe somebody at Paramount might have thrown that into the script just because they are airing, you know, they own, you know, the television rights to, or they're involved with the television rights of Star Trek.
Or doing an homage.
Yeah, like Paramount, like Star Trek is owned by like Paramount and CBS. They're like kind of a joint thing, so. And I'm not that big of a Star Trek fan to get into, like, well, who owns what, this, that, and the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what it kind of reminded me of, just because of the reason why we have Friday the 13th, the TV series, is because they wanted to take two of their film franchises and turn them into television shows.
Yeah, very interesting. And also, in this episode, because it is from 1988... Ryan records the televangelist with a VCR. Like, oh, be still my heart, those old things, VCRs.
Yeah, my father, I think, had just bought a VCR a year before, 1987.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Great technology then. Two channels on the TV that weren't coming in clear, and a VCR.
Yeah,
oh.
I remember buying the 8-hour tapes for a VCR being very expensive at the time.
Oh, totally.
Yeah,
totally.
An 8-hour tape for a VCR would run you like a pack of them for $100. Later on in like the late 90s or early 2000s, I would buy a pack of tapes to record something. This is before we had a DVR, and it was like $20.
So basically the power of this glove, which Jack recognizes from the show, is that the glove absorbs the disease from the person. And then the person has to deliver it to a live person, which then it amplifies and then causes the victim to die.
That's
all
where the cool
in great Cronenberg style.
Yes, that's where all the Cronenberg style effects and like just disgustingness now come in. Now, is it just me, or does it seem like a lot of people seem to be suffering from boils and
Totally,
European black,
type stuff.
Yeah, European black death, bubonic plague, infection, all that, you know, infection. What was the name of the movie with the monkey and Dustin Hoffman?
It wasn't infection. It was contagion.
No, it wasn't contagion, but you know what I mean. So
yes.
Yeah. Or Rabid. You know, like the movie Cronenberg directed. Which I haven't seen in like a million trillion years. But, yeah, I mean, this episode came out in 1988, so we are past The Fly. We are past The Dead Zone and Videodrome. In fact, it's like Cronenberg hadn't worked on anything really since The Fly until this episode came out.
Now, this episode has so much of that great practical effects, gore, blood, slime, boils. It was so good, like, because the glove is a white glove, and then when it captures and contains the disease, it turns into a fleshy glove that's kind of pulsating, you know, very, very Videodrome-like. And then if you try to peel off the glove, the hand underneath is very, I don't know, slimy, and the skin has been taken off almost as if the glove is your skin. So you have to deliver this disease to someone else, or else the disease will, you know, take over your own body. And every time that this effect happens, you know, if it's the, like the gunshot wound at the end, the glove has the gunshot wound. If it's these boils, the glove has the boils. It's very much like this glove turns fleshy, and that is so Cronenberg. It's like, yes, oh my God. Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this episode.
Here's a good question. Where is the other glove?
Unknown.
You don't have one glove. Gloves come in a set.
Yes, they do.
The only reason you'd wear one glove is if you're...
Michael Jackson!
Well, I wasn't going to use that jackass, but I was going to say a certain Jedi master who's now in theaters making billions of dollars at the box office in The Last Jedi has one glove as well, because he has to hide his mechanical hand.
You've got as one comedian says, one hand to keep your lady safe, one to give her pleasure.
Yeah. I don't know if I would ever wear a glove while I'm pleasuring my girlfriend.
Depends what type of glove is.
Oh, you mean if there's, like, stuff attached to it?
Oh, you know, if you're wearing, like, a latex glove and you're doing something like, you know, something that I teach, fisting, yeah, you'd want to actually have that latex glove on your hand.
Oh, yes. Your class on fisting that we covered.
But you could have, like, a vibrating glove or fur-lined glove or something. Yeah,
yep. You're, I do remember now your class on fisting when we started doing Constantine earlier this year.
Yes.
Another thing I want to point out is that, did you notice the opening sequence for this episode after the song, our credit sequence, is really long? It's almost over 11 minutes?
You know, I didn't notice that because I was actually, I'm currently in Northeast Pennsylvania visiting family because we're doing our holiday thing. So I actually watched the episode on YouTube because they have full episodes. So it wasn't the actual full cut that the DVD discs have. So I think that one was kind of edited down for YouTube.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, so the name of the alchemist, do you have any information about this alchemist that Jack is looking up? Antonio Sforza?
Yes.
It's 1500s. That would make it the... 16th century Italian alchemist.
Okay. So I couldn't find anything on an Antonio Sforza. But there was an actual house of Sforza that was during Renaissance Italy, based in Milan, and that acquired the kind of like the ruling class of the area, had a coat of arms and everything. They're very big in Florence as well. Now, there isn't an Antonio on record that I was able to find, but there is a Caterina, and Caterina Sforza was very much an outspoken woman, and she did have an interest in alchemy. Nothing that I found in the historical text that I looked at claimed that she was an adept at alchemy. It was basically a hobby. But there are some really good quotes that have survived the eras that Caterina actually spoke. So let me give you a couple of them.
Okay.
So, I bend my knee to no man unless I choose to. That's a good one. If I could write all, the world would turn to stone. If I have to lose, although I am a woman, I want to lose in a manly way. So she was kind of a badass of her time. And so I would not... question why they chose the Sforza house in order to have this glove be part of that, because they were a very ruling family in Milan, Italy, the same time period that they chose, and they had a lot of different dealings with the rulers from different areas, and Francesco Galazzo Maria Glan Galazzo Ludovisio. All of those were basically people within the house of Sforza that were extremely powerful. Having this interest in alchemy and this connection to protect the leaders at the time from disease seems to make sense in some sort of, like, twisted reality way. So they didn't, they weren't historically accurate, but they were doing a historical nod, I think.
One thing I think is kind of funny is that Mickey says that this really scares me in this episode, and I was just like, but the Scarecrow didn't scare you even more?
Maybe it was all the gore.
Maybe. Oh, by the way, we completely missed pointing out about owning Scarecrows in the last episode. I've made Scarecrows. I've owned them. I own gloves. I think you own gloves. This is kind of one of those weird objects that's not really like, did you ever own this type of thing? We both go, no, not really. But yeah, I think we own well, gloves. Yeah.
Okay. I have to clarify because I thought we were doing the MacGuffin thing at the end of our show.
Yeah.
But
I'm only doing it now because we missed it in the last episode.
Yeah, that's all right. Okay, so the Scarecrow, now, I've never actually owned a Scarecrow. But
really?
Wait, what? I'm from California, dude.
So what? You're Miss Rosetica. You throw that Halloween weird party every year.
Yeah.
Plus you have
weird
kids.
Weird parties don't involve Scarecrows. They involve serial killers.
Yeah, but you also have a child. You never made a Scarecrow with him?
No. No.
Good God, woman. No.
Why would I have a Scarecrow if my garden is like an 8 foot by 4 foot patch of land?
You
like
can
I have,
buy
I live
straw
in
at a feed store or something or not a feed store but a nursery or a farm.
No, I don't do the rural kitsch, you know.
Sigh.
But I will say that I have made straw dolls for magical purposes. Which is kind of a little bit like a version of a voodoo doll, but it's not a voodoo doll because it's going off of a totally different methodology.
Yeah, and sure in the 72 episodes we'll get to a voodoo doll at some point.
Yeah. But I have made a straw doll, and those are actually a little bit different. They don't have faces. You take the straw and you bend them into kind of a human proportion, and they're only about like 6 to 10 inches tall.
What about... What was the thing in the Blair Witch Project that was hanging from a tree? Was that a straw doll or was that a stick man?
That was a stick man.
Okay.
It's basically like sticks kind of put into a man shape with a triangular chest.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
And I've never been to Burning Man, even though my brother has like multiple times and like keeps saying like I need to go, but you know. There's a lot of pagan stuff involved with scarecrows, but you know.
Okay. That was the other thing. You're pagan. You're a witch.
Yes.
Okay. So I thought, you know, scarecrows had something to do with paganism as well, but maybe that's only fiction, correct?
Well, yes and no. It depends on exactly what type of gods that you worship and your purposes. Now, I have never needed a quote-unquote good harvest because I live in the city. My harvest is basically lettuces and some squash every now and then, tomatoes and jalapeno peppers.
Yeah, and also you don't need you haven't exactly needed any type of like sacrifice for fertility in any way because you've been pretty fertile with your own child and being a surrogate for two.
Exactly. So, fertility has never been something that I needed additional help with.
Not your problem.
But scarecrows have very, very deep roots in paganism because of its ties with the harvest. Crows and birds of all sorts, they will peck the living shit out of your crop, and there are beneficial ones that eat the bugs, and then there are not beneficial ones that eat the seed. Having the scarecrow is supposed to give you a good harvest. Now, there's a lot of beliefs that go around the actual energy of the harvest itself, and so if you imbibe your scarecrow with energy from one of the many harvest gods, you know, the ones that provide good harvest, fertility for the land, you know, any one of them. There's like at least 24 of them from around the world. Then you could say that, okay, well, the energy that you're putting into this can transmute and become kind of a living thing that you're able to interact with and provide sacrifices to. There's other cultures where just the sacrifice alone, even without mention of a scarecrow at all, that is something that provides the good harvest for the next year. You know, usually it was the last sheaves of wheat, the last bundles,
mm-hmm.
that get burned, and then that's what is the sacrifice. Sometimes those bundles are actually put into the shape of a man. So it's not really the scarecrow, that type of straw sacrifice is kind of the basis of Wicker Man and a lot of like that whole Burning Man type of thing, where you're taking the wheat, you're forming it into a man, then you light it on fire as the sacrifice. That's different than the purpose of the scarecrow, because the scarecrow is supposed to be there for the full length of the growing season. So there's a lot wrapped up into it. Like, I could probably do a whole show if I bring all my notes out as to what I have for scarecrows.
Did you ever meet a faith healer in all of your weird travels?
I have.
You have? And what was he like?
He was an idiot.
He was an... Okay, then that pretty much sums up exactly what faith healers really are, because they're absolutely full of shit. I mean, sometimes they're in these barns, and again, I go back to Supernatural. There was an episode where Sam and Dean are trying to get to a faith healer because Dean got electrocuted pretty badly, and he doesn't have much time left to live because his heart has been, like, seriously screwed up. And they go to a faith healer that heals Dean because he has... His wife is using a connection to a Reaper, and a Reaper is killing somebody else and passing the life force back to the person that the faith healer is trying to heal. The episode guest stars, not as the faith healer, but a woman who is in need of help because she is dying of, I think, cancer, is Julie Benz, who you might know as playing Darla on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And she was Rita on Dexter.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, some of the techniques that faith healers use, the idea of mob mentality, mm-hmm. where so many people putting energy towards the one thing, the person going up on stage has this expectation that they're supposed to act in a certain way. So they will fall down when the faith healer touches them. And, you know, but they're not really healed. It's just the collective energy of the mob and expectation. Or there's the techniques where the person is put under some sort of hypnotic state, you know, in this loud, bumping environment. You know, they're going into a hypnotic state because they want to, and they trust this man, and then the hypnotist, the faith healer, puts these hypnotic suggestions in, like, you are now healed, you know, and you can get up and walk.
The other thing, just one quick thing I wanted to point out, which is not mentioned in Lisa's book, but I did find online, there's a great The Moon Is a deadworld.net guy doing Going Antiquing is covering every episode of Friday the 13th. He's actually started earlier this year, so I don't know how far along he is, but he did point out that Toronto's CN Tower is clearly visible in the background of Jerry's ship, which upon reading that and when I was watching the episode just before we started recording, that is clearly true. This cool. Very famous tower in Toronto is seen several times behind Jerry's ship. Which makes it, you know, basically, you know, we're led to believe that this is not being shot in Toronto.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the very last bit, Jack is so upset that his friends, all of his friends turn on him and try to kill him. Like, Lewis, and now his friend Jerry tries to kill him with the glove.
Yeah, that's really depressing.
It is. It is. Like, you get involved with these cursed objects, and suddenly your friends want to kill you because they want the benefit of the object.
Yeah, yeah. That's really depressing.
But then there's this touching moment with Ryan, you know, it's like, oh, but where are your friends? You know?
Yeah, and but then there's the thing where Romy's like, well, get out. And I'm just like, what? Lady! Jack has had just as much to lose as you do. I mean, what have you lost? Your lousy fiancé. Ooh.
Yeah, he was a dick.
Yeah, I mean, that really seemed like she's lost a lot so far. Not quite yet with what's to come. And that's all I'm going to say. I like the episode because Cronenberg directed it. I like certain aspects of it, but I still like Scarecrow more.
I think these were both really good episodes. I enjoyed both of them. I enjoyed the Cronenberg a little bit more for other reasons that I won't go into. But, yeah. I would totally watch these two episodes again.
You like it because you're a sick puppy. But that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
I want to give a good shout out to Matt Ray, who provided us some amazing articles to times that the Friday the 13th TV series had appeared in magazines back in the 80s. And Mr. Zeneca will pull a couple more pictures and post them to the Facebook page later this evening or tomorrow before we post this episode.
Indeed, I will.
And that's pretty much all we have for these two episodes, Faith Healer and Scarecrow, here on the Dead TV Podcast. These episodes, again, aired in February. I wanted to say February 1st, that's not Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day is February 2nd, right?
February 2nd.
Okay, okay. So I was looking at that going, wait a minute. When is Groundhog Day? Almost forgot. Okay, yeah, no, it's February 2nd. There was no Christmas episode for the first season because we pretty much jumped from November to January in our previous recording. We do not have a Christmas episode, but it is Christmas time right now, and this is the last episode we will record before Christmas, but not the last episode we will record for the year, as we will be recording again on the 31st of December, New Year's Eve, and that episode will post the day after my birthday, January 5th. We'd like to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. We are still in Hanukkah, so a happy Hanukkah to all our Jewish listeners, and happy holidays to every other denomination that doesn't celebrate Christmas or Hanukkah.
Happy Yuletide!
Happy Yuletide! Yes, isn't it...
everyone!
Isn't that on... Oh, that's actually the day we post the episode. Friday?
Exactly!
December... No, I'm wrong. What day is Yule? The 20th of...
Is the winter solstice, which could be the 21st or the 22nd.
Okay, so it could be the 21st or the 22nd. Okay. Happy Yule either way, but this episode will be posted on Friday, December 22nd, if you're listening right now. Don't forget to go to our Facebook page, The Dead TV Podcast, and to follow the rest of the podcasts that I record, such as Supernatural Creatures and Lore, and a potential new one starting in 2018, which I'm not going to give away quite yet what it is, as I currently am scouting for a co-host. It will be posted there as well, but also check out radiohorror.wordpress.com for all the information about the Radio of Horror show, which is ending its 10th anniversary coming up very soon as we are continuing into our 11th year of broadcasting. I am Dr. Chris. You can find me at ChrisDSAV.
And I'm Mr. Zeneca, and you can find me at Elegantly Kinky.
Have a good night, everyone, and again, happy holidays.
Happy holidays.